Welcome to the House of Meditation, to our meditation service that we hold weekly. Tonight I'm going to begin a special series based upon my newest book, The Three Principles of Oneness, How Embodying the Cosmic Perspective Can Liberate Your Life. The book came out in October. And as most of you know, I traveled around quite a bit at that time, offering talks, doing book signings, started out west, and then made our way back here to the East Coast, and then down south. And we were supposed to go back out on another leg, but with the crisis that occurred, of course, those plans changed. So I thought I'd use the next series of weeks as an opportunity to open up the book and kind of go over each chapter. If you have questions after one of the talks about the book or the chapter we covered, please email me. Go to asksenseitony.com and you can email me there. So what I'd like to do tonight is start with the beginning and talk a little bit about how the book came to be. And I want to start, as I do every talk, by giving a reading. So tonight's reading comes from chapter 1 of our book. And that is by Joseph Campbell. The new discoveries of science rejoin us to the ancients by enabling us to recognize in this whole universe a reflection magnified of our most inward nature, so that we are indeed its ears, its eyes, its thinking, and its speech. The mystical theme of the space age is this: the world as we know it is coming to an end. The world as the center of the universe, the world divided from the heavens, the world bound by horizons in which love is reserved for members of the in-group. That is the world that is passing away. Our mythology now, therefore, is to be of infinite space and light, which is without as well as within. So before I begin the talk, I also want to say yesterday was Mother's Day, and I just want to offer all the mothers out there a very happy belated Mother's Day. There is a saying in the loving kindness scripture of Buddhism that a Buddha or Bodhisattva loves like a parent, like a good mother. Now, the foreword of this book was written by a friend of mine, Nana Visitor. Some of you may be familiar with her work. She has been a star of stage and screen for many decades. She was most popularly known as a character on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that part of the franchise which was known for sort of taking Star Trek to sometimes darker places. For me personally, I found it to be the most interesting of the whole series. And Nana and I got to know each other. She did some studying with me, and we've actually done a retreat together. And so she was very kind to offer the foreword in the book. So I just wanted to kind of give you a little background on her. We met in New York City, and I was doing an article for Mindful magazine, and I did an article about her incredible journey from some of the suffering and struggles she went through and finding her way out of them through the practice of mindful living. So I highly recommend her work. So, the introduction. Why did I write this book? As many of you know, I've written a number of books, and I love to write, but honestly, the idea of putting a book together is always a lot of work. And so before I would put that much energy into something like that, I take a great deal of time to sort of contemplate and reflect, why am I going to do this? Because I like to have things have a sense of purpose and to start with intention. So until that becomes clear for me, I probably won't proceed. But this book came to me many, many years ago and has been kind of working within me for a little over two decades. And it sort of lays out for me the foundation of the teachings that we practice and follow. So in order to tell you the thing that started that, the situation that kind of got this thing rolling, and it was something that really happened to me a little over 20 years ago, and I now call it the Walden Pond Parable. The story is this. When I was attending graduate school and living in Cambridge, Walden Pond, which I had always been in love with Thoreau and his book, Walden, and the whole meaning behind that. But what was so cool was that Walden Pond was now our refuge from city life. It was only roughly about 10, 15 minutes outside of where we lived in the heart of Cambridge, off Harvard Square. And it was just a beautiful place, such a peaceful place. And so we would go there quite often. And I even led a retreat there one year. But this, in the summertime, Walden served as a very practical place to go and cool off. And it would get packed with people. So my wife and my son at that time, who was only about 2 years old, we went to Walden Pond. Now, I was also running a lot back then. I've always tried to stay somewhat fit, and I was very fit then. I was doing some coaching for the Harvard boxing, some of the people on the boxing team, and was in very good shape. So I was running a lot, and so it was a very hot day. It was probably in the high 80s, 90 degrees, and I was wearing shorts and sneakers. And if you've ever been to Walden Pond, it's quite large. In fact, sometimes calling it a pond seems to be a bit of a pun, because it's quite large. And so I would make my run around the pond. So I ran around the pond, which I say is quite large if you ever look up the specs on it. But I was very fit, very young, and I thought, you know, this is just part of my exercise. So I get around the third time to the back of the pond. So if you will, think of this as the beach. And I was on the other side, over where the original Thoreau House foundation is. And I decided, I was so hot that I decided, you know what, I've watched people swim across this ginormous pond, and I thought, I can do that. So I got down and jumped into the pond, and it was very refreshing at first. I kept my shoes on, my sneakers, and I proceeded to swim. And I'm a good swimmer. But I got to tell you, by the time I got to the middle, roughly the middle of the pond, and I should tell you too that Walden Pond, I think, is somewhere around 100 feet deep. It's a very deep pond. And the water is very, very cold. I got to the middle of that, and I was spent. My limbs were sort of starting to cramp. I felt like I couldn't hardly get my breath. And I got to be honest with you, and I've told this story many times, I really thought this could be the end for me. And I thought, oh my God, here I am, Walden Pond, man drowns. And there was this real moment where I was struggling. to try to keep swimming, but it wasn't possible. I mean, I just literally felt like I couldn't move my limbs. And the water felt so icy and cold. And it felt like I couldn't get my breath. And then, somewhere from in the very depths of my being, I heard a voice. And that voice said to me, very clearly, very strong, but very gentle, let go. You're okay. And somehow, when I heard that voice, it suddenly occurred to me that all I had to do was roll over on my back. And I remember rolling over on my back, which I love to swim, and I'm a Pisces, so I love the water. And I remember rolling over on my back and thinking about all the times I had done that in a pool. And the sun was shining very strongly, very brightly. And as I lay there, I began to float. And it was effortless. And then another thing occurred. I started to feel differently. The cramping in my arms and legs just sort of washed out of me. I became more aware of the warmth of the sun. And I swear to you, the water began to feel warmer. And I just lay there and float. Now, there was a part of me that could have stayed in that space. It was so beautiful. And I felt so completely at one with myself, with everything. I felt as if I could have stayed in that moment forever. And I felt as if I was somehow participating in eternity. But then the thought of my little son, and my wife came into my mind. And I realized I wanted to get back to them. That as beautiful as this experience was, being with them was where I needed to be. And so I just floated for a little while longer, and then I would roll over and I'd start to swim. Real easy strokes. And if I got tired, I would just roll over on my back and float. Swim some more. So, the funny thing is, I finally get to the shoreline, and I emerge from the waters, and my wife and son are there on some beach towels on the shore by the beach house, and my wife stands up, and she has this look of terror on her face, and I come over, and I just collapse onto one of the beach towels, and I basically passed out. And she always loves to joke with people and tell them that, you know that expression, someone turned green? Well, my wife will tell you that she literally, when I came out of the water, she said I was literally green. So anyhow, that story is true, and that story was a real, you know, deep experience for me. But I share it because it's also illustrative of the heart of the teachings of oneness. And that is that all of us, and this is part of the first chapter, all of us have experienced a great sense of separation. All of us have experienced feeling disconnected, maybe disconnected from the people we love, maybe disconnected from our culture, our community. maybe even disconnected from the cosmos themselves, where you feel alone. And that's frightening. And sometimes we struggle to achieve some hidden sense of perfection, to try to somehow work our way into some ideal. But somewhere along the way, everybody gets tired. And sometimes you get to the place, like I did in that pond, where you don't think you can go on. The heart of the teachings of the Dharma, the way of oneness, is the same as the voice that I heard in the middle of that pond that day. Let go. It's okay. It's okay. Everything is all right. And just as I learned in that moment to allow myself to float and to stop struggling and to abide in the glorious grace that gives me life, that gives all of us life. If we learn to let go, we realize some important things. The first is that if we change the way we're thinking about something, it changes everything. When I was struggling to get to the other side, and I felt like I couldn't go on, and that was the end for me, when I listened to that voice that said, "It's okay, tell me. Everything's okay. Let go. Stop struggling." And I realized I could lay on my back and float. It taught, reaffirmed for me one of the key teachings of oneness, which is if we change the way we're thinking about a situation, it changes everything. And that is the heart, as you know, the foundation of mindfulness, which is to learn to change the way we're thinking. That is how we ultimately stop our suffering. So that was number one. And remember, for me in the story, right, I went from being cold, cramped, and just miserable to feeling relaxed and warm and feeling great pleasure. It changed because of the way I was thinking. And the way I was thinking changed the way I was feeling. And the way I was feeling changed the way I was acting, which changed the consequence. Because who knows? If I had kept struggling, if I tried to muscle my way through it, I might have died that day. There's no doubt about it. And that's what we try to do, you know? We try to muscle our way through things, when really what we need to do is step back, stop, look, listen, see what's going on, and see if the way we're thinking about something, the way we're believing about something, is helping us. And the most wonderful gift we have is that we can change it. We can change that even when we can't change anything else about the situation. The other thing that I learned about this is that, you know, just like when I was swimming, you tend to think of your own power, right? It's me that's doing this, you know? I'm swimming. I'm the one that's doing this. But the fact of the matter is, whether I was swimming or I was floating, the power of that situation did not exist with me. It existed with the water. It was the Walden Pond that was allowing me to move and live and breathe. And that's how I think of Buddha nature, our true self, the ground of being. It is the very thing with whom, as we say in our liturgy, we live and move and breathe. But how often do we think about that? And I realized then that the truth is all of this suffering comes out of this sense of separation. But the truth is, we've never been separate. And there is nothing that can separate us from oneness. But it is a delusion of the mind that makes us believe that. And we believe that somehow through our own power, through our own struggles, we'll liberate ourselves. And what you realize when you have these experiences of awakening is that it's all functioning. It's all happening. The cosmos, the universe, all of it is supporting you, if you wish to see it that way. I've often taught that there are two views one can have of the universe. The first is paranoia. Paranoia is a view or an attitude that sees the universe as the enemy. It's out to get you. And certainly when I was swimming across that pond that day and I was stuck in that middle and thought I was going to die, there was a moment of where I hated the whole thing. I remember the flashes of thoughts and things that went through my head before I heard that deep, still voice. You should have been stronger. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you able to do this? Hell, you've seen old people do it. You can't do it? What's wrong with you? You're weak. And then I began to, there was curse the water. Why is it so cold? Why is this pond so damn big? And all those voices from the ego self, and all those voices of the conditioning of separation were there in that moment. And it didn't help me one bit. In fact, if I had listened to those voices, I probably would have died. But the other view of the universe that one can cultivate besides paranoia is pronoia. Pronoia is the belief that the universe is actually supporting me. It's actually helping me. And the key is for me to get in harmony with the way the universe is. To observe and understand the Tao, the way of the universe. And when I do this, and I get into harmony with it, it's just like that experience I had in the middle of Walden Pond. That voice says, let go, stop struggling. Stop trying so hard to be perfect. It's okay. You're okay. And all you have to do is realize that. And when you do, you change the way you see things, and you change the way you feel, you change the way you act, and in my opinion, you become a part of the change of the very universe, the change which can lead us to a higher, more universal consciousness. One that draws us out from our more limited, bounded, tribal identities. One that allows us, that lifts us, just like that water did to me that day, into a higher state of being. So that's the Walden Pond parable, and the reason why I wanted to write this book, because it's all about how we can learn from the universe everything we need, and that when we get into harmony with the universe, that's what helps us to be free. In chapter 1, I say that we have a need for a cosmic perspective where we awaken to a deep and abiding sense of connection with the universe and how it actually seems to work. A view that personally opens us up to a larger sense of identity beyond the limits of our egocentric selves. 2, the need for a mindfulness practice to create calm and clarity in order to enhance a sense of oneness within ourselves. And three, the need to creatively participate purposefully and meaningfully in oneness with others in the world. This is what the book's trying to address. And we're going to address it in three ways, and that's how the chapters of the book are broken up into different sections. The first section is, I hope to enlighten. I hope to help you wake up to the three principles of oneness and what we actually know about our universe. Two, I hope that I can educate, that I can teach you this knowledge and show you how it is scientifically sound and can inform and provide an evidence-based spiritual foundation for your life. And third, that I can help you embody this, help you integrate this knowledge in a way that is healing, transformative, both for you personally and for the world. So that's my goal. Pretty lofty. And I hope in some small way this book will help you in that direction.